This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses.
Hey guys, this is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry and help you guys run better businesses. And today we have another one in the series of 50 State Lien Law. Today that we're going to dive into the rules required in Illinois with Illinois lien expert Jeremy Baker with the Baker Law Group. How are you doing today, Jeremy?
I'm good, Carolyn. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
So before we dive into the particulars of the lien rules in Illinois, how did you get into this construction law business? Kind of give us a little bit of background.
Sure. Well, I've practiced law in Chicago and nationally for 20 years now. The first 17 years of my practice were with very large law firms, Cozen O'Connor, Am Law 100 firm, and then Schiff Hardin and Am Law 200 firm, which recently merged with Arent Fox. I was with Schiff Hardin for about 14 years, right up to the moment when I started my own firm in 2019. And all the work that I did at Schiff Hardin for the last, and at my firm for the last 17 or so years has been related to design and construction law. So that's how I got into mechanics liens.
Gotcha. Do you have any background in construction before the law side of it?
Well, I realized that I probably should have been an architect after I graduated from law school. So, you know, I've got that going for me. But no, I can't say that I was a mason or anything like that in a prior life.
Gotcha. No worries. Okay. So I always start off with the first question is, do you have to be licensed to be a contractor in Illinois?
Licensure requirements for contractors in Illinois tend to be local. Licensure is more of a statewide thing for design professionals.
Gotcha.
And if you were, for example, to perform work in Cook County, which embraces the city of Chicago, you know, there are a bunch of licensure requirements for contractors, yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. And then, so who in Illinois would have lien rights?
Well, design professionals. So the last that I checked the case law, even if a project is not built, a design professional that did work would have lien rights. And certainly general contractors, subcontractors, material suppliers, and then laborers as well could have mechanics lien rights, as long as they, you know, perform lienable work and have the other things that go along with a valid lien claim.
Gotcha. So I guess let's start out with just overall, how extensive is the process to have a valid lien in Illinois? Is it simple? Is it complicated?
It's really complicated, and I think it's probably true in most states. I think mechanics lien law in Illinois is one of the most intensely complicated things I've encountered. Our lien act is nearly 200 years old, and it's incomprehensible. It's written in English, but not English that I recognize. And if we were to take all the case law in Illinois on all the nuances, it would stack from the floor to the ceiling, probably more. And there's a bunch of tricks and traps here that I think is probably true in most states. If you don't know what the case law says, even if you read the heck out of the lien act, I don't know that you're necessarily likely to get it right. So I would say they're complicated, they're time sensitive, and since we're going to scratch the surface here, it goes without saying that, you know, I'm not intending to provide legal advice to anybody
absolutely
out there in this podcast, since we're just scratching the surface.
No, absolutely. We're just talking. We're talking generally, no specific legal advice. Absolutely not. Yeah. Okay. So as a contractor, what would be the first step like you would have to do to perfect your lien rights?
Well, so the first thing that we should just cover is the distinction between what's lienable and what's not lienable in Illinois. And typically, if you are going to perform some sort of a permanent improvement, provide labor, material, design, surveying, you know, even construction management in some cases, that would be lienable. Things that would not be lienable would be, you know, temporary improvements, estimating, scheduling, money advances, delay claims. So, assuming that you provided a lienable services, the requirement for a lien, for you to have lien rights, for that your lien rights to attach, a contractor would have to have a valid contract to improve the property, and the contract would have to be with either the owner of the property or someone knowingly permitted by the owner to hire the contractor to do the work. They'd have to have a contract to furnish those lienable services or materials. They'd have to have fully performed the contract or have a reasonable excuse for not performing and a valid debt. And so, you know, once we have the lien rights attached, then we talk about perfection, right? Because an attached lien is worthless unless it's perfected. And that's where we get into questions of providing notice, recording documents, and doing things within the required time limits.
So let me ask you a question. So does the contract have to be a written contract?
No.
No. Okay. And so do companies or people besides people in direct contract with the owner have lien rights as well?
Yeah. You know, what the Lien Act says is it has to be the owner or someone knowingly authorized by the owner. And so as long as you can show as long as you could show that there is somebody that's acting on behalf of the fee owner of the property that wants the work to be performed, you can generally, cross that threshold. But yes, it can't be a surprise to the owner. They have to have knowingly authorized somebody to perform the work or the services to have lien rights.
Gotcha. You can't just show up and start painting somebody's house and then file a lien for it if you weren't asked to.
Exactly.
I think that's pretty much the same in everybody's state.
Yeah.
So for the person that's in direct contract with the owner, what steps do they have to take to perfect their lien rights?
Well, it's a great question because, there's a few major distinctions in Illinois lien law. And right now I want to focus on liens on private property. So private property liens, because the requirements for public projects are a different animal. But if you are talking about a private project, the law recognizes two different categories of lien claimants. There is an original contractor, which is at the top of the chain, you know, the prime contractor, the general contractor, the one who is in contract with either the owner or somebody knowingly authorized by the owner. And then everybody else is a subcontractor. So anybody who is downstream of the original contractor would be a subcontractor. And that's true regardless of the work that you do. So when I tell my architect friends that they're a subcontractor, they get all upset. And I say, well, you know, even a design professional could be a subcontractor if they're not at the top of the chain. But back to your question, you know, what do you need to do? If you are an original contractor and you have that agreement with either the owner or somebody knowingly authorized to hire you, you have to either record your lien with the recorder of deeds in the county where the project is located, or if you want to skip that step, you can go directly to a foreclosure lawsuit, but you have to do it within 4 months of your last date of substantial work. And this is one of the areas where the Lien Act is got some traps for the unwary, because other deadlines I'm going to talk to you about are phrased in terms of days, not months. But yeah, when we say within 4 months of last work, that means four calendar months. It doesn't mean 120 days. So it can be more or less depending upon which months we're counting.
So even if they did work on the last day of the month of, you know, January, it would still be four calendar months from then.
Yes. So you would not calculate 120 days. You would click forward 4 months.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Okay. So they have 4 months after they do that. And so they don't have to record a lien. They can just move straight to the foreclosure suit.
They can, although it's almost never done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no notice requirements on private commercial projects for an original contractor to make a mechanics lien claim. You know, the rationale would apparently be that the owner knows who they hired, who the prime, you know, contractor is, and there's some additional steps for those that fall into the second category of lien claimants, the subcontractors.
So before we get to them, so if you do file a lien, do you have to send the owner a copy of the lien that was filed? Is there any requirements like that?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, so that's the original contractors. What about subcontractors? What steps did they have to take to have a
So if we're talking about a private project, not a public project, and we're talking about a commercial project as opposed to a residential project, the subcontractors must provide notice of intent to make a lien claim within 90 days of their last date of work. And that isn't 3 months, that's 90 days.
Okay, so you count on this one.
Yeah, so you know, the The guys in the powdered wigs that wrote the Lien Act 175 years ago, and their, you know, infinite wisdom, felt that it was appropriate to give some of the deadlines in terms of months and others in terms of days. 90 days within your last date of substantive work, you have to provide that written notice to a number of parties. Of course, there are exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. If a subcontractor didn't provide that timely notice, if they happened to be identified on a sworn statement that was provided by the general contractor in previous pay applications, you know, that's one of several ways that a subcontractor can be excused from, you know, the obligation to provide that 90-day notice. The trouble, though, is that if the general contractor provides in their sworn statement a dollar amount that is lesser than what the subcontractor believes they're owed, if they don't give that 90-day notice and they want to cross their fingers and hope that they can identify themselves on a sworn statement that was provided previously by the GC to the owner, they're stuck with whatever amount is listed in that sworn statement. So the best practice is always to give your notice within 90 days. And a lot of people don't think about this, but, you know, there's no obligation to wait to the end of the project to give notice. You know, unlike some states where contractors and subcontractors have to take action at the very beginning of the project in order to preserve their lien rights, we don't necessarily have anything like that in Illinois, but nothing would stop a subcontractor from giving their notice on the first date of the project, even if they don't anticipate a payment problem. So you can give it early, it's almost never done, but if you're gonna wait, you wanna do it within 90 days of your last date of substantive work. And then, like an original contractor, you must then record your lien within 4 months of your last date of work or go directly to a lawsuit.
Yeah, gotcha. So another thing that I tell my clients too, like I tell you the deadlines, you can always send it earlier, right? And so I tell my guys, have a collection strategy that includes the lien rights timeline, but also works on your cash flow, right? Like if you've got done 90 days ago, I mean, you know, usually invoices are due in 30 days. If you're not due 35th day, send a notice. So as we're talking about this notice of intent lien that they must send out, how do they send it and what needs to be in it?
Well, yeah, I can absolutely cover that. And I'll just, before I get into it, I'll mention that I couldn't agree with you more about, you know, there's really no reason to wait until the very end. I mean, if your accounts receivable is 90 days out and you're just starting to think about reaching for the phone to talk to a lawyer, you might want to rethink that, because people in our industry don't necessarily think of themselves as credit managers, even though they extend credit, right? They don't think about the credit worthiness of who they're in contract with, which is often a single purpose LLC. And they're going to do the work first and they're going to get paid later. And so, you know, I think too few people assess the credit worthiness of the people that they're working for. And so, you know, if you're going to... if you're going to wait to the end of your time frame, you're going to run into trouble, particularly because, you know, in order for the lawyer to get the lien right, you need to, it's not absolutely required, but it's certainly a best practice to go to a title company and have some title work done. You can get a tract search done, or you can go for a full-blown title commitment. My practice is to always do that, and I like when my clients are coming to me at least a month before they think that they may have a deadline, you know, because we really don't know whether you're an original contractor or a subcontractor until we see who's the true owner, you know, of the project. And we don't know whether there are other parties that need to be provided notice, you know, and so it's certainly the best practice to not wait until the very, very end.
No, and I also think that it's easier to get paid if somebody's not paying twice, right? Like, if the general contractor's already been paid and the owner realizes they have to pay again, they're going to fight that, as opposed to, like, if I was going to pay the general contractor anyways, but you gave me enough notice, so I'm only paying once. Yeah, it's not such a big deal.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Illinois, everything we're discussing today is an oversimplification. So, you know, there's an exception to every rule. However, if we were really going to try to boil down Illinois' lien law, you know, down to a sentence, it's that an owner is never allowed to owe the GC less than the GC owes its subs. So if you are an owner that is collecting the documents that the Lien Act prescribes that you collect each month as part of the payment process. And if you are looking at the content of those documents, not just accepting the paper, but looking at the content and thinking about, is the content giving me a red light or a green light to pay the general contractor? And a red light would be an instance if the owner sees the GC is not paying the subs. There are circumstances where the owner needs to leap over the GC and pay the subs directly. As long as the owner does everything right under the Lien Act, then the owner should never lose, at least in theory. But if an owner makes payments to a general contractor and the general contractor absconds with the money and the paperwork that was required by the Lien Act to be collected by the owner either wasn't collected or the owner didn't know enough to engage with the content of that paper enough to know I can't pay the GC, if those payments would be wrongful as between the owner and subcontractors. If the owner doesn't do everything right, the owner can absolutely be exposed to a double payment. So if you're an owner and you want to run to a judge and say, I don't know anything about these subcontractor lien claims, I fully pay the GC, get ready to lose, unless you've done everything right under the Lien Act. So the possibility of having to make a double payment for the same work is absolutely in play in Illinois.
But I think you have a little more of a benefit, at least in the courts that you practice in, that you have a judge that's very familiar with lien rights and all of that stuff.
Yeah, we're very fortunate here. The Circuit Court of Cook County, I've heard, is the largest unified court system in the world. I don't know that to be true, but there's hundreds of judges under one roof. And the Chancery Division, which handles a whole variety of things, has a mechanics lien and mortgage foreclosure section with, 2 to 4 judges, depending upon the year, but all they do is liens. And so, we're very fortunate. Of course, I do liens all over the state of Illinois, and in some of the collar counties around Chicago, it's not that unusual to have a judge that will be working on something very different before they pivot over to the mechanics liens.
Yeah, I know. I'm so jealous. I wish I had that. Oh, yeah. Anyways, arbitration, that's what arbitration is for. Okay, so the notice, can it be the notice that the subcontractor has sent? Can it be sent certified mail, or does it have a particular way that's prescribed?
It does. So we're talking about the notice of intent to lien that a subcontractor has to provide within 90 days of their last date of work. The contents of the lien, are important, but also the method of delivery. Because it either needs to be personally served or it needs to be sent certified mail, return receipt requested, and it has to be limited to a specific addressee. And so if you're talking about a bank, for example, mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to know who to send the notice to. And if it's my typical practice is if I don't know who to send it to, I'll send the lien notice to 15 different representatives of the bank, the
really?
Local, teller, the president of the company in another state, because I got to get back that green card, which shows that it landed in the hands of a person. So it has to be sent certified mail, return receipt requested, limited to a specific addressee. It needs to be sent to the owner or the owner's agent, to the architect, or the superintendent in charge of the project, which is maybe antiquated language that dates back a while, and the lender, if known.
Ah, gotcha.
So you got to get that lien notice in the hands of the right people, and this is one of the reasons why I say to those people out there who are thinking, do I have reason to call a lawyer? You really don't know whether or not you're an original contractor or a subcontractor until you take a couple weeks to have a title company look at the ownership of the property. And so when in doubt, the best practice is to assume that you're a subcontractor and give the notice. Our Lien Act says that you don't make an admission that you are a subcontractor. If you give the subcontractors notice and it turns out that you're not one, but you got to give the title company time to work. You got to figure out whether you're an original contractor or a subcontractor. Then you got to figure out if you are a subcontractor, who am I sending the notice to? And then you got to get the notice in somebody's hands and signed on a timely basis. So it's time sensitive. And I like to see my clients come to me a month before we think we might have a deadline just to avoid any rush.
So they actually have to sign for it to be effective?
They have to, I believe that if they were to dodge service or gotcha. If it's COVID times, I've seen green cards come back that have a stamp that just say COVID acceptance. You know, we're in, you know, strange times right now, but just because I tend to be pretty risk adverse and paranoid with defending my clients' rights, I'm not going to sleep well if I don't get a green card signed by somebody who received it. The Lien Act says that as long as the notice is effective when you send it.
Okay.
So, you know, if you send it on, you know, day 89, you know, it doesn't get acknowledged until after that date. In most cases, you're going to be okay. But it's not unusual for me to send out, you know, 20 or 30 notices in every direction just to make sure.
Sure, and cover all the bases.
Yeah, exactly.
So you send notice to the lender. Does the lender get involved just from your experience on making sure the lien claim is settled, paid or not? What do they average normally do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the reason for the notice requirement is that an owner is obviously going to have less visibility into the downstream contracts. They might not know what the status is of those subcontracts. You know, a lot of times what we'll see is a general contractor that may be fighting subcontractor change orders is going to put a number in the sworn statement that they hand upstream that closes one eye to the fact that the sub believes there's a lot more work that they did that they want to get paid for. So the owner is accepting the documents each month. Everything looks copacetic. And then you get this lien notice that says that more money is owed. And so what will happen is the lender and the title insurer, you know, which works hand in glove with the lender, is going to get unhappy when they get the lien notice. And it is a mechanism, I think, of trying to get the powers that be to decide whether or not it's in their interest to make a payment or to tell the GC to make the payment before the lien arrives. So I've always liked the 90-day notice requirement, except for when I'm racing to get them out the door, because I do think it's an effective way for subcontractors to get paid without actually having to go through the process of recording a lien or foreclosing a lien. You can begin a dialogue with people who may apply useful pressure on an owner or a general contractor to get the sub paid.
Well, because at the end of the day, you don't want to just file a lien. The whole point is to get your client paid, right? And the sooner you can do that in the process, the better, right? We're not just going to file a lien to file a lien.
Yeah, and you know, Illinois lien law, it's this beautiful balancing act between the rights of a bunch of different parties. Of course, one of the purposes of the Lien Act is to make sure that people who do work get paid. But it's also intended to allow owners and third parties to confidently transact, you know, in real property. And so, you know, there's this balancing act of not just getting contractors paid, but making them go through some of these rigorous processes. So if an owner or if a lender or someone who might want to acquire the property is beyond a certain date threshold, maybe they can feel like they're clear of liens. And if, you know, if they are not clear of a certain date threshold and we see a lien claim recorded or we see notice given, you can put faith in what you have received, which is one of the reasons why it's hard to sort of amend or to take back what you send out in the first instance. And, you know, this is getting back to the question of lenders. One of the things that's I've always thought it's a unique aspect of lien law in Illinois. I'm sure there are some other states like it, but our lien law, subject to the idea that there's this balancing act, it's pretty lien claimant friendly in the sense that if there isn't enough value in the property when it's sold to pay off all the claimants, you know, the lender for their mortgage and all the lien claimants, if there is a question of priority and who is going to be first in line with their handout, the priority date that's assigned to a lender is the date that they record their mortgage. But the priority date for a general contractor is the date of their contract. So lenders have the ability to get surprised by notice, which says that there is a GC that had a contract before the date of their mortgage, and that's when they would be you know, particularly concerned. Yeah, you know, it's not to say that a junior lien claimant that doesn't have priority can't foreclose, but of course, you know, a lender doesn't want anything to get in the way of its secured interest in the property So lenders do get very upset when they get these notices in the mail.
No, absolutely. Because, you know, we have the same thing, too. It's called the relation back doctrine, where all work relates back to the first work. And if that's before the bank filed their mortgage, then potentially you could wipe out their mortgage if you foreclosed. Absolutely. So it brings up another good question. So how long are liens good for? When do they expire?
So you have to foreclose. You have to file suit to foreclose a mechanics lien within 2 years of your last date of work.
Okay.
Which is something that is not true for public liens. You've got much shorter deadlines to go into court. But it is important for people to understand that in Illinois, there's a fairly low bar to get a lien on the property, and it can sit there for a while. Mm-hmm. If you are thinking about doing a lien, if you haven't been paid, but you're thinking that maybe you don't want to get neck deep in a lawsuit, a lot of times you give the notice, sometimes you get the claim settled. If not, you record the lien, sometimes it gets settled. If not, maybe it sits out there for 6 months and then it gets settled. So you don't necessarily have to run into court. There is, however, the ability of a variety of parties who have an interest in the property to shorten the deadline of a lien claimant to file suit down to 30 days.
Really?
It's Section 34 of our Lien Act allows those parties to send what's known as a Section 34 demand. And if you are the recipient of a Section 34 demand and you're a lien claimant, you need to get your suit on file within 30 days or you lost your lien rights. So it's sort of a way for owners to say, all right, low bar for the claimant to put a lien on my property, no urgent deadline for them to file suit necessarily. All kinds of trouble is created, you know, with my lender and with, you know, other parties who are involved in my deal. I don't think this lien is any good. You know, I'm going to call your bluff. You've got 30 days to file suit. So a lot
of pushing. That's interesting. I like that, because here's the thing that we run into is, like, in Texas, that if I cannot prove that your lien is facially invalid, I have to do a whole suit to get it removed. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to making them file suit within 30 days, which would, you know, get things settled a lot faster.
Well, yeah, and then if they don't file suit within 30 days, then you can go, you can demand that they voluntarily sign papers releasing their lien, and if they refuse, then you can go into court and you can ask a judge to judicially remove the lien to give you an order that you can record, and then the lien claimant that didn't voluntarily release their lien after they let the 30 days pass has to pay the attorney's fees of the party that was trying to have the lien removed.
So that was my next question. So if you have to file suit to enforce your lien and you're successful, do you get your attorney's fees?
In some circumstances, you can. One of the new aspects of our Lien Act, Section 38.1 of our Lien Act, which must have gone into effect 7 or 8 years ago, I think, made Illinois, if I'm not mistaken, the last state or maybe the second to last state to have a statutory mechanism for bonding over a lien claim. And you can do a common law bond and you don't necessarily have to run into court, but if you bond over a lien claim in Illinois, that particular section of our Lien Act has fee shifting. It's a little more complicated than this, but you know, if you are a lien claimant and you recover more than 75 cents on the dollar, you get your attorney's fees paid. If you recover less than 25 cents on the dollar, then you can be liable for attorney's fees. If you're in the middle, no one is awarded attorney's fees. But there are other ways too, right? I mean, like most states, bad faith pleading. There are ways that you can step in a bear trap and subject yourself to attorney's fees. But assuming that we don't have a bond, and assuming we don't have any contractual fee shifting or any bad faith pleading, There are very limited circumstances under the Lien Act where attorney's fees may be recoverable. And for contractors, if the owner fails to pay without just cause or right, you know, those are the keywords in our Lien Act, the owner can be on the hook. And so just without just cause or right is defined by our Lien Act to mean that, the owner has asserted a defense to the lien claim which isn't well-grounded in fact and warranted by existing law, or a good faith argument for the extension, modification, or reversal of existing law. So, there's that, but then there's the mirror image of that provision, which says that if a court finds that a lien claimant brought an action to foreclose a lien without just cause or right, then the lien claimant can be on the hook for attorney's fees as well.
Gotcha. Okay, so I know we mentioned this. So how are public works projects different? We know we can't file a lien on a public works project, but what does filing a bond claim on a public work project look like in Illinois?
Well, you know, there are certainly bond requirements, like, you know, the Miller Act. Illinois has got a little Miller Act, and so we can talk a little bit about the bonds that need to be in place on public projects. But like I would assume is the case in most states, you cannot put a lien on a piece of public property and then ask a court to sell it, right? If taxes are raised to build a school and, you know, there's a subcontractor that isn't paid, you know, we still got to have a place to send the kids to school. And so one of the main differences for a private and a public, lien claim is because we can attach the lien to the property and ask it to be sold. What a public lien claim attaches to is the money that has been appropriated by the legislature for the project that has been set aside. And so there aren't specific deadlines in Illinois really? Where you need to make your public lien claim within a certain, you know, number of days of your last work. But the rub is that when the money's gone, the money's gone. So, you know, you don't want to waste any time on a public project. If you feel like you need to lien, you want to make sure that you comply with the requirements while there is still some money that's sitting there that has not been paid out by the owner to the prime contractor.
Gotcha. So just how, and what is it, like a certified letter or just very similar to the other notices?
So the claim for lien, you know, has to include a sworn statement identifying the claimant's contract, describing the work done by the claimant, stating the total amount due and unpaid as of the date of the notice, you know, for the work. You know, the lien has got to be served, you know, on the public body in question and the upstream contractor. I should say that subcontractors have public lien rights, but original contractors don't. Right, because the original contractor at the top of the chain, you know, it's the money that has yet to be paid from the public body to them that it can be lien. So it's really a remedy for subcontractors. And so they have to serve their notice on the public body and the contractor via registered or certified mail, return receipt requested, with delivery limited to the addressee only. And this is where it gets a little bit tricky when you try to figure out who it is that you need to serve the notice on. And my recollection is, even though I don't do a ton of public lien work, I really mostly do private commercial project liens. My recollection is that you have to serve the lien claim on different recipients for local government projects versus state government projects. So I'm fairly certain that the Lien Act says that you have to serve the clerk or the secretary of the unit of local government, if it's a local project. But for a state project, you have to serve the director or other official of the state whose duty it is to let the contract. And that can be a real head scratcher, especially when we have to have the notice delivery limited to a specific identifiable addressee.
Gotcha. That's interesting. So you can't, not a lot of states have this where you can actually have a lien on public funds. I know we don't have that. So you still have, you have that remedy lien on public funds. So do you have bond claims still too? Like, does the general contractor have to get a bond? Is that still like the Miller Act? Is that still an option? Or just not used very often?
Yeah. So, you know, for those who are listening to this might know, you know, the Miller Act is, you know, a federal law that, you know, requires, bonds to be procured for the benefit of the people who do the work, you know, as an alternative remedy, because, you know, you're not going to go sell the Pentagon, you know, or something like that if somebody does a little bit of, you know, drywall work in there. And there are little Miller Acts in most states, you know, laws which require bonds for the performance of state and locally funded projects. And that's true in Illinois, too. We have a public construction bond act that is incorporated into every public contract in the state. It requires payment bonds and performance bonds. And I believe that the threshold is, you know, any kind of public work over $50,000, there needs to be a bond. And so that is another remedy that is distinct from the lien on public funds in Illinois.
Gotcha. Okay, so on the lien on public funds, do you have to file a suit to enforce that, or does it just normally get paid? I'm just curious. How would you...
Yeah, you do need to act relatively quickly. I'm trying to remember exactly what the deadlines are. My recollection is that if you are a government official that is on the receiving end of the notice that a contractor is making a claim, mm-hmm. my recollection is that the government's obligation is to withhold a sufficient amount of money from the prime contractor in order to pay that claim until the claim is released by the claimant, until it's adjusted by agreement of the contractor and the subcontractor, or until the claim is adjudicated in court, or expiration of a 90-day period of time where the lien claimant has an obligation to run into court and file suit. And that's an important deadline. The claimant must file suit to enforce their lien against public funds no later than 90 days after the notice of lien is served on the unit of local government or the lien is forfeited, right? Because if you are a government entity and you receive a lien claim and you only have a certain amount of money that's been appropriated for the project, you can't exactly wait 2 years, you know, to figure out whether or not that money should be paid to the GC or not. So just because of the nature of the remedy, gotcha. On a public lien, you need to act much more quickly to get in the court.
Gotcha. Wow. So that's pretty quick after you file that notice. Okay. Let's see. Some other questions that I always get is, so a material supplier supplies materials, what level of incorporation do they have to prove to have a lien right? So like some states, they have to prove that it was actually used there. Some states, they just have to deliver it. I'm kind of curious, what is Illinois' position on it, that a incorporation that a material supplier has to prove?
Subject to exceptions, the burden's relatively low. It's you have to prove delivery to the project site. And then I my recollection is, although it's been some time since I've looked at this issue, it's sort of like a burden shifting, where if the supplier can prove that they delivered, you know, bills of lading or otherwise to the project site, then it burden shifts to the owner to show that the materials, you know, weren't incorporated for one reason or another.
That they went someplace else. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And do you have any rules on specially fabricated materials? Like stuff that's specially fabricated for one job and really couldn't be used anywhere else?
You know, there might be a case out there on this, although none come to mind. My instinct is that you can lien for specially fabricated materials, although I'd like to be quoted less on that point than some of the other things I've said already.
No worries, and I can only imagine with the stack of case law you have that are 200 years old, that there's quite a subjective answer on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, and I would be curious to know in other major urban centers, you know, New York, for example, but just because of the sheer volume of construction and the sheer volume of money that is spent on construction in Cook County, which embraces Chicago, you know, with our unique courts that have really outstanding mechanics lien judges that really know this stuff, there is a tremendous volume of case law out there. Yes, absolutely.
That's awesome. Like, hopefully it's pretty accurate if you have judges that do mechanics lien. So, like I said, so jealous.
Well, you know, it's generally it's pretty good. You know, there are those outlier decisions like everywhere. You know, what really causes some unique issues over the last couple of years, you know, is, you know, in COVID times, the Recorder of Deeds office, I believe, ceased to exist in Cook County as an independent entity, and it became part of the county clerk's department, and the backlog that the county experienced in actually taking documents that are recorded. So you can walk a document in, and it's going to get a recording stamp that day. Mm-hmm. But by the time the records are uploaded and they're updated so that a title searcher would be able to spot a document that was recorded, there was a real lag in recent years due to COVID, and it hasn't entirely gone away. And so when you have these obligations to give notice to certain parties that might be interested in the property, you know, it's almost like an impossible situation if somebody recently asserted some lien or easement or mortgage You know, and your title search company isn't going to have visibility in anything that happened in the last, 45 or 60 days. Wow. You almost just have to pity the lawyers who are, who wind up in those cases, because there's no amount of due diligence that you can do to overcome that sort of thing.
Except go search every document that hasn't been indexed at the county recorder's office, which,
yeah,
I can't even imagine what that would look like.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so did I miss any main points that are important in Illinois?
I think that we covered it. The Lien Act is prescriptive as to owners and contractors. There's a lot of requirements you can't deviate from. One of the most important requirements of our Mechanics Lien Act is found in Section 5. It's this sworn statement that I've been alluding to. The Lien Act says if you are an owner, you shall ask the contractor to provide a sworn statement that shows what are, the subcontracts underneath them. And there's some very specific requirements that need to be in there. For example, as one of several examples, the address and the contact information, for the subcontractor has to be in there, because if you're the owner and you're getting a sworn statement and you're saying that the sub's not being paid, you have to have some way to contact them to reach out and talk about payment for them. And so the form of the document is very important. A contractor also is required to give a sworn statement if they're asked by the owner to do so. If a contractor refuses to provide a sworn statement when they are asked, with some exception, they're probably going to lose their right to lien.
Really?
Because the Lien Act is really prescriptive about what an owner must do, about what a contractor must do. And I like to say that whoever follows the Lien Act most closely wins. Unfortunately, and I don't think this is unique in Illinois, I don't think that liens are not so much about justice as they are about predictability.
Yeah.
Because people often get the short end of the stick. It is often the case that somebody may have given notice and maybe they gave it to the wrong party or maybe it had the wrong content, but then somebody relied on that notice and the time period extended and then they transacted in the property. Maybe they loaned more money, they sold the property, whatever it is. You wind up with the short end of the stick, and it's a shame somebody goes unpaid, but the goal of promoting not just contractors getting paid, but also owners and lenders and others being able to transact confidently in real property. Sometimes people get the short end of the stick, and that's true. A lot of times, if the property has insufficient value to pay off all of the claims, right? There's this concept of priority, and even if your lien attached, even if it was perfected, if you are the last person in line to stick your hand out to be paid, if there's no more money left, you get the short end of the stick. So our Lien Act is not about justice, it's about predictability. And I like to say that, whoever follows the Lien Act most closely wins. Because when you follow the Lien Act closely, you are throwing off documents and information that allows others to know how to react. And that is really what the Lien Act is all about in Illinois.
Yeah, and the more notice, the more likely are you to get paid sooner. So I think that's a good rule just across the board. Well, Jeremy, I appreciate you being on the show today. It's a lot of great information. Thank you for explaining Illinois lien law to us. Maybe we'll have you on again to talk about subcontracts, my next favorite topic.
It would absolutely be my pleasure, and I was honored when you referred to me as an expert at the beginning of the podcast, but the Illinois Supreme Court would want me to say that they do not recognize experts. There's no certification in the state, so I make no claim of expertise to anything that I talked about here, but I do thank you, Carolyn, for paying me that compliment.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks a million.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Thank you.